Chapter 3. Somebody? I give you my sacred honor, Mr. Christopher, answers Pratchett, that I haven't the faintest notion. But for the manner in which he settled her cap strings, I should have doubted this. But in respect of positiveness it was hardly to be discriminated from an affidavit. Then you never saw him? I followed her up with. Nor yet, said Mrs. Pratchett, shutting her eyes and making, as if she had just took a pill of unusual circumference, which gave a remarkable force to her denial, nor yet any servant in this house. All have been changed, Mr. Christopher, within 5 years, and somebody left his luggage here before then. Inquiry of Miss Martin yielded, in the language of the Bard of A1. Confirmation strong. So it had really and truly happened. Miss Martin is the young lady at the bar as makes out our bills, and though higher than I could wish considering her station, is perfectly well behaved. Farther investigations led to the disclosure that there was a bill against this luggage to the amount of 216.6. The luggage had been lying under the bedstead of 24B over 6 years. The bedstead is a four-poster, with a deal of old hanging and valance, and is, as I once said, probably connected with more than 24BS, which I remember my hearers was pleased to laugh at the time. I don't know why, when do we know why, but this luggage laid heavy on my mind. I fell a-wondering about somebody, and what he had got, and been up to. I couldn't satisfy my thoughts why he should leave so much luggage against so small a bill. For I had the luggage out within a day or two, and turned it over, and the following were the items. A black portmanteau, a black bag, a desk, a dressing case, a brown paper parcel, a hat box, and an umbrella strapped to a walking stick. It was all very moldy and fluey. I had our porter up to get under the bed, and fetch it out. And though he habitually wallows in dust, swims in it from morning to night, and wears a close-fitting waistcoat with black calamanco sleeves for the purpose, it made him sneeze again, and his throat was that hot with it, that it was obliged to be cooled with a drink of Alsop's draught. The luggage so got the better of me, that instead of having it put back, when it was well dusted and washed with a wet cloth, previous to which it was so covered with feathers, that you might have thought it was turning into poultry, and would by and by begin to lay, I say, instead of having it put back, I had it carried into one of my places downstairs. There from time to time I stared at it and stared at it, till it seemed to grow big and grow little, and come forward at me and retreat again, and go through all manner of performances resembling intoxication. When this had lasted weeks, I may say months, and not be far out, I one day thought of asking Miss Martin for the particulars of the 216.6 total. She was so obliging as to extract it from the books, it dating before her time, and here follows a true copy. Coffee Room. 1856. Number. 4. Pounds SD February 2D. Pen and paper 006 Port Negus 020 Ditto 020 Pen and paper 006 Tumbler broken 026 Brandy 020 Pen and paper 006 Anchovy toast 026 Pen and paper 006 Bet 030 February 3D Pen and paper 006 breakfast 026 broiled ham 020 x010 watercresses 010 shrimps 010 pen and paper 006 blotting paper 006 messenger to paternister row and back 016 again when no answer 016 brandy 2s deviled pork chop 2s 040 pens and paper 010 messenger to Albemarle Street and back 010 again detained, when no answer 016 salt cellar broken 036 large liquor glass orange brandy 016 dinner, soup, fish, joint, and bird 076 bottle old East India brown 080 pen and paper 006 216.6 mem. Colon January 1st, 1857. He went out after dinner, directing luggage to be ready, when he called for it. Never called. So far from throwing a light upon the subject, this bill appeared to me, if I may so express my doubts, to involve it in a yet more lurid halo. Speculating it over with the mistress, she informed me that the luggage had been advertised in the master's time as being to be sold after such and such a day to pay expenses, but no farther steps had been taken. I may here remark that the mistress is a widow in her fourth year. The master was possessed of one of those unfortunate constitutions in which spirits turns to water, and rises in a ill-starred victim. My speculating it over, not then only, but repeatedly, sometimes with the mistress, sometimes with one, sometimes with another, led up to the mistress's saying to me, whether at first in joke or in earnest, or half joke and half earnest, it matters not. Christopher, I am going to make you a handsome offer. If this should meet her eye, a lovely blue, may she not take it ill my mentioning, that if I had been 8 or 10 year younger, I would have done as much by her. That is, I would have made her offer. It is for others than me to denominate it a handsome one. Christopher, I am going to make you a handsome offer. Put a name to it, ma'am. Look here, Christopher. Run over the articles of somebody's luggage. You've got it all by heart, I know. A black portmanteau, ma'am, a black bag, a desk, a dressing case, a brown paper parcel, a hat box, and an umbrella strapped to a walking stick. All just as they were left. Nothing opened, nothing tampered with. You are right, ma'am. All locked but the brown paper parcel, and that sealed. The mistress was leaning on Miss Martin's desk at the bar window, and she taps the open book that lays upon the desk. She has a pretty maid hand to be sure, and bobs her head over it and laughs. Come, says she, Christopher. Pay me somebody's bill, and you shall have somebody's luggage. I rather took to the idea from the first moment, but it mayn't be worth the money, I objected, seeming to hold back. That's a lottery, says the mistress, folding her arms upon the book. It ain't her hands alone that's pretty made. The observation extends right up her arms. Won't you venture £2.16.6 in the lottery? Why, there's no blanks, says the mistress, laughing and bobbing her head again. You must win. If you lose, you must win. All prizes in this lottery. Draw a blank, and remember, gentlemen sportsmen, you'll still be entitled to a black portmanteau, a black bag, a desk, a dressing case, a sheet of brown paper, a hat box, and an umbrella strapped to a walking stick. To make short of it, Miss Martin come round me, and Mrs. Pratchett come round me, and the mistress she was completely round me already, and all the women in the house come round me, and if it had been 16-2 instead of 2-16, I should have thought myself well out of it. For what can you do, when they do come round you? So I paid the money down, and such a laughing as there was among them. But I turned the tables on them regularly, when I said, my family name is Bluebeard. I'm going to open somebody's luggage all alone in the secret chamber, and not a female eye catches sight of the contents. Whether I thought proper to have the firmness to keep to this, don't signify, or whether any female eye, and if any, how many, was really present when the opening of the luggage came off. Somebody's luggage is the question at present. Nobody's eyes, nor yet noses. What I still look at most, in connection with that luggage, is the extraordinary quantity of writing paper, and all written on. And not our paper neither, not the paper charged in the bill, for we know our paper, so he must have been always at it. And he had crumpled up this writing of his, everywhere, in every part and parcel of his luggage. There was writing in his dressing case, writing in his boots, writing among his shaving tackle, writing in his hat box, writing folded away down among the very whalebones of his umbrella. His clothes wasn't bad, what there was of them. His dressing case was poor, not a particle of silver stopper, bottle apertures with nothing in them, like empty little dog kennels, and a most searching description of tooth powder diffusing itself around, as under a deluded mistake, that all the chinks in the fittings was divisions in teeth. His clothes I parted with, well enough, to a second-hand dealer not far from St. Clement Stains, in the Strand, whom as the officers in the army mostly dispose of their uniforms to, when hard-pressed with debts of honor, if I may judge from their coats and epaulets diversifying the window with their backs towards the public. The same party bought in one lot the portmanteau, the bag, the desk, the dressing case, the hat box, the umbrella, strap, and walking stick. On my remarking that I should have thought those articles not quite in his line, he said, "No more if a man's grandmother, Mr. Christopher, but if any man will bring his grandmother here, and offer her a fair trifle below what they'll fetch with good luck, when fetch scoured and turned I'll buy her." These transactions brought me home, and, indeed, more than home, for they left a goodish profit on the original investment. And now there remained the writings, and the writings I particular wish to bring under the candid attention of the reader. I wish to do so without postponement, for this reason. That is to say, namely, viz., i.e., as follows, thus. Before I proceed to recount the mental sufferings of which I became the prey in consequence of the writings, and before following up that harrowing tale with a statement of the wonderful and impressive catastrophe, as thrilling in its nature as unlooked for in any other capacity, which crowned the allay, and filled the cup of unexpectedness to overflowing, the writings themselves ought to stand forth to view. Therefore it is that they now come next. One word to introduce them, and I lay down my pen, I hope, my unassuming pen, until I take it up to trace the gloomy sequel of a mind with something on it. He was a smeary writer, and wrote a dreadful bad hand. Utterly regardless of ink, he lavished it on every undeserving object on his clothes, his desk, his hat, the handle of his toothbrush, his umbrella. Ink was found freely on the coffee room carpet by number 4 table, and 2 blots was on his restless couch. A reference to the document I have given entire will show that on the morning of the 3rd of February, 1856, he procured his no less than 5th pen and paper. To whatever deplorable act of ungovernable composition he immolated those materials obtained from the bar, there is no doubt that the fatal deed was committed in bed, and that it left its evidences but too plainly, long afterwards, upon the pillowcase. He had put no heading to any of his writings. Alas! Was he likely to have a heading without a head, and where was his head, when he took such things into it? In some cases, such as his boots, he would appear to have hid the writings, thereby involving his style in greater obscurity. But his boots was at least pairs, and no two of his writings can put in any claim to be so regarded. Here follows, not to give more specimens, what was found in Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.